Welcome to the All Songs Considered Plus One podcast. I'm your guest host, Tim Hotep Aku, and today's special guest is Neil Brennan. Neil Brennan is a stand-up comic, writer, and director, best known as the co-creator of Chappelle's Show with his friend and then-writing partner, Dave Chappelle. Neil is also a hip-hop head. That fact is not only evident in rap references and the skits he writes and the jokes he tells, but also in his approach to comedy as a whole. Neil's brand of humor is irreverent, thought-provoking, and fearless in the face of controversial topics like race, just like the music of the rap legends who've inspired him. I sat down with Neil to talk about his Netflix special Three Mics and how hip-hop soundtracks his life and career in comedy.
My experience with hip-hop was always like sort of mid-early 80s, so it was like, you know, it's tricky. It was like Run DMC, it was Herbie Hancock, Rocket. And I lived in Chicago at that time, and I remember watching someone breakdance to Rocket and going like, what's
happening?
What is this?
Yeah.
Like, this is so cool. But I didn't know what it was. When I heard Don't Believe the Hype, I grew up in Chicago and Philly, and I'm the youngest of 10 kids, so it was just, I would sort of get like inherited taste.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, it was like a lot of classic rock, basically.
Yeah.
And then I heard Don't Believe the Hype, I think my freshman year in high school, and it was at a basketball game, and it was my high school basketball game, and I remember like the team running out to Don't Believe the Hype, and I was just like, what is going on? Like, who made this song? Like, what? It was so crazy, because it was also the sort of sentiment that you don't hear in music that much. It was so confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like sort of sportsy, and it just had all these things going for it. And the sound, like the Bomb Squad Shockley sound was just so like, it's so crazy and dissonant.
Mm-hmm.
and just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And then I listened to Then I bought Nate Takes a Nation of Millions, and the cool thing about the time I grew up was like, so that was happening, and then Spike Lee was starting to get movies made.
Yep.
And then when Spike started doing press, and then like he made Air Jordan commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And when Spike started doing press for I think Do the Right Thing, that was the first time I heard about film school.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, wait, you what?
You can go to school to make movies?
You can go to school for movies? Like, oh, okay, well, that's where I'm going to go. Like, I have to do that. And he went to NYU, and then I applied to NYU and got in, luckily. But I see that as, like, I don't know if it was that direct
mm-hmm.
an effect on my life, but it was definitely, like, an emotional domino effect. That's mm-hmm. how I remember it.
And I mean, it's amazing to grow up in a time when you have all those things happening at the same time
yeah.
to inspire you. Like a very, very fertile time for being a creator and
yeah.
saying, all right, I can do this. All right.
Yeah.
Wait, I can be anti. Because this is the thing about Public Enemy is like, they are anti. Like, this song is talking about the radio is whack. Right?
Yeah.
This song is
yeah.
talking about politically things are whack. Like,
yeah.
like really, really being confrontational, as you say. And I think it's always important to see someone in the spotlight maybe step out first and be the vanguard of that for you to be
yeah.
like, all right, wait, I could do that too. All right.
Yeah, and I don't think like, oh, I'm the public enemy of comedy at all. But I definitely
yeah.
like the Public Enemy was like a huge influence in terms of, it was the first time I heard kind of black, like revolutionary
mm-hmm.
5%-ish,
mm-hmm.
Anyone expressed that, and it became like, of course, like
yeah.
yeah, they're correct,
you know,
like
what?
Their take on history was like, oh yeah, they're 100 yeah, John, I why would you like John Wayne, like why would you like Elvis, like it
exactly.
was the first time I just saw another a very clear point of view that ran counter to the world I lived in.
Here's what I want you all to do for me.
Bang. Caught you looking for the same thing. It's a new thing. Check out this I bring. Uh-oh, the road below the level, cause I'm living low next to the base.
Come on.
Turn up the radio. They're claiming I'm a criminal. But now I wonder how. Some people never know. The enemy could be the Frank Guardian. I'm now a hooligan. I rock the party and
Never wanna run about the gun. I wasn't licensed to have one. The minute they see me, fear me. I'm the epitome of public enemy. Used, abused without clues. I refuse to blow a fuse. They even had it on the news.
Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype.
So that was Public Enemy's Don't Believe the Hype.
Man. I feel like we're at a college radio station.
Yes, I had to say it like that. Public Enemies, Don't Believe the Hype.
Yeah.
A very, very, very powerful, pivotal song. Important in hip-hop and important to Neil Brennan. One Neil Brennan who's in the studio right now. I wanted to ask you, while listening to the song, I wanted to ask you about how that song affected you and your communication and relations with people who are black, right? Like, as yeah. like I always wondered from you know, about the perspective of a white person listening to hip hop that was either Afrocentric or very politically charged, or, you know, about black radical politics, how it affected them and how it informed their conversations with people. So can you give
yeah,
me
I mean,
bit?
Like I said, it was the first time I heard it, like, any sort of black radicalism.
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense to me.
Mm.
I wasn't like, it didn't scare me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel like I was a part of the problem. I just felt like, oh, yeah, no, they have, these are a lot of, like, Chappelle one time said that I'm obsessed with justice.
Mm.
He's like, you're obsessed with justice. And this to me was like songs about justice.
Mm.
So I didn't know what sample, I didn't know anything. I didn't know who Harry Allen was.
Yeah.
I didn't know any of these people. But it's still, and the other thing I wanted to mention is Chuck's voice is so great.
There's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's so
the, it's
great.
It's the only boom. It's the boom. Like, when he talks, you have to listen. It's
yeah.
the most, one of the most powerful voices in hip-hop.
Yeah.
yeah.
And, yeah, so it was just, like I said, it kind of created a domino effect in my life. Like, I was listening to the song. You know the picture of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King that dude is selling and Do the Right Thing?
Yes.
I had that on my wall in high school. Like, I was on, and not even, it was not, I don't know, I just, like, loved this whole thing. Like, and I remember my brother's a comedian, and I came to New York and when in the 80s and would hang out with him and other comedians. And I remember a comedian named Warren Hutcherson was like, oh, you know, Spike Lee has a store in Brooklyn. And I was like, I have to go to the store.
That store is across the street from my high school.
I've still never gone. But I like the idea
joint.
That you could get a 40 acres and a mule hat to
mm-hmm.
me was like mind blowing.
You know, you talk about being obsessed with justice. In Three Mics, there are a couple of jokes that kind of point out the absurdities of racism.
Yeah.
And double standards in America. Do you feel like it's really important for that to be part of your art too? This obsession with justice to talk about.
Yeah, I think so. I also just think you write what you write about. Like, I keep, my brain keeps going to that. My
mm-hmm.
brain keeps going to racial stuff, unfair stuff, and gender stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It just repeatedly in sketches and that, like anything I write, it just, that's what I keep firing off. And I don't even get in the way. I just like, yeah, I just, that's just what I'm interested in.
You know, it was interesting to me to see that there's a one-liners component, because it makes me think that you're the type of guy whose brain is constantly firing off. You're writing stuff down. There's always like something going on that could be used as fodder for what you're about to create. Is that accurate?
I mean, it's not. There are people that are more fertile brains than me.
Mm.
And I have a list of them on my wall. No, I'm kidding. I will murder them. No, and no, like I'm lucky. Like I have ideas there, but I'm not comparing myself to, I'm only comparing myself to people with who have more. And I'm just like, damn it.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I be more like him?
Yeah.
It's not a long list, but there's still a list of people that I'm like, man, that guy.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I asked that, and I'm interested in your output, is because one of the songs you chose was My First Song by Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Right? And that song is about the amount of grind, the amount of effort he had
yeah.
to put into getting to where he is.
Yeah.
And I think that you are a type of person who worked really hard to do
yeah.
the things he's done.
That's what I always say. I'm like, I'm not a genius. Like, as much as you may think I have a fertile output, like, it's gonna, I just finished this hour, and now I have to write a new hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I could name five comedians that seem to be able to come up with an hour in 6 months. I can tell you right now it's going to take me 2 years.
Wow.
Like, I just know it's going to take me 2 years.
How long did Three Mics take?
2 years.
Wowzers.
Yeah. Like, so, but I know Louis C.K. and there's Bill Burr. There's lots of guys that can do it really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not one of those guys. And I'm not going to force myself to do it. I'm going to put in full effort. I'm just, this will be my third hour.
Mm.
And it's like, they don't get easier. You know what I mean?
They do not.
Because your standards get higher.
Uh-huh.
And in it's not like music or any other genre where you can like, I'm going to bring in some kids. You know, like you have to do it yourself.
It's funny that that you say that because, you know, before you were like, well, I wouldn't consider myself the public enemy of comedy. But would you consider yourself the Jay-Z of comedy?
No.
Okay.
Also not.
I'm glad you didn't fall for the trap.
Yeah.
But I do want to play my first song by Jay-Z. Almost an ode to hard work.
Yeah.
The grind behind the glamour.
Well,
right?
Talk about it afterward, but yeah.
All right, let's do it.
I never rode in a limo like I just dropped flows to a demo. Like it's 92 again, and I got O's in a rental. Back in the stool again, no problem. It's a whole lot simple when you think back. You thought that you would never make it this far. Then you take advantage of the luck you handed. But the talent you've been given. Ain't no half stepping. Ain't no slipping. Ain't no different from a block that's hitting. Gotta get it while the getting's good. Gotta strike while the iron's hot. When you stop, then you gotta fit it. Good riddance. Goodbye. This is my second major breakup. My first was with a pager, with a hoopty, a cook pot, and a game. This one's with the stew, with the stage, with the fortune. Maybe not the fortune, but certainly my life. My pain and my struggle. The song that I sing to you is my everything. Treat my first like my last, and my last like my first, and my first is the same as when I came. It's my joy and my tears and my laughter it brings to me. It's my everything.
And we're back with Neil Brennan. That was My First Song by Jay-Z. You had some additional commentary.
Well, yeah, the thing I was going to say is, you know, Jay-Z's known one-take hove. He doesn't write his rhymes down. He just goes in. It's all very facile and easy. And that, I like that song because he actually is like, no, this is hard and, like, it took a long time and you've got to stay hungry. And I like using the Biggie interview at the beginning.
Yep.
And the other thing, the ending, when he's kind of going through all the sort of like sort of all
shouting
his,
out all
yeah,
the people,
all
players. Group, yeah.
That's basically a precursor to Kanye's Toast song.
Mm.
See, the difference between Jay-Z and Kanye, Jay-Z did it on his eighth album. Kanye did it on his first
album. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Kanye did this whole thing of like this grand thing. Like, it's basically like DVD commentary about their songs or career.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, like I like that Jay-Z, it's like a sentimental thing and he talks about all his friends and specifically, and it's not so, doesn't glamorize like any sort of violence or drugs. It's just like, this is what it's probably like for me.
This is how I got on. This is what I had to do.
Yeah.
And it wasn't simple. It's not overnight thing, though it may seem like that.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget, like, Jay-Z came out when he was, like, 26, right?
Yeah.
At a time when rappers got their first deals at 19 and 20, and he was guesting on people's albums and stuff like that. So, like, he was longer in the tooth than a lot of people.
Yeah.
And he had to put in a lot of work, refine his style to get to the point that he's at.
Yeah.
And here we have him as basically the most consistent, one of the longest runs ever in hip-hop.
He's the Rolling Stones of hip-hop.
He's the Rolling Stones of hip-hop, and he, you know, wears the hats of businessmen, artists very well. It makes me think about you and the multiple titles you have, right? So you're a writer, you're a stand-up comedian, you're a producer, you're a director. Which defines you best of those?
I mean, the thing I like about Three Mics is that it kind of was everything. Like, I directed it, I sort of developed it, and so it's like writing, producing, directing, even the art. Kind of was like, I sort of knew what it would should be, and that's what it ended up being on Netflix. And like, from the when I did it at Largo a year and a half ago, it's sort of like I knew like that'd be the best layout. So everything. I just like I always just say like I'm in comedy. Like I just
You're
do
in comedy.
Like I'll write a sketch one week, or like last week I wrote it at Saturday Night Live with Aziz. Then this week I wrote it at The Daily Show with Trevor, and I wrote at SNL with Dave, and I'll like, and then Chris Rock asked me to open for him You know what I mean? So just a bunch of, and then I got a, and 2 weeks ago I directed a commercial with LeBron.
Nice.
So like, just like, I don't know. I don't want to have to pick.
Yeah.
I also, it's like, I would say it's like craps too, where I've got like chips on a bunch of different stuff in case there's the table goes cold.
You know, going back to yourself as a young cat going to NYU for a semester, you know, then being a doorman at a comedy club.
And that's the other thing that's parallel. The Jay-Z first song thing is like, it is a lot of the middle mic stuff is just autobiographical. It's like someone said it was like a memoir, which I think is true.
Did you have any inkling that things would pan out this way?
No. Things are, sometimes I'll go like, man, this is going really well. like I'll, because especially this week, because I'm getting a lot of praise for three mics and stuff. And things are going real. This worked out really good. But I always make fun of that with people where I'm like I'll say that to LeBron. I'll be like, this worked out, huh? Like, and that's the thing is everyone's like, yeah, this is going really well. So yeah, like this is going really good. Like sometimes it's hard and it's like, it ever. I have a joke with Chris where I always say, like I'll say to Rock, I'll be like, you're maybe the greatest comedian ever. And I'll be like, stop that. And I'll go, it doesn't do you any good day to day. You know what I mean? You don't get to like, oh, because of this, I get special. No, it's just, you're just great at something. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, you still like have trouble sleeping or you got to get up. Or like there's still like the annoyance of life, but it's still a nice, it's not, it's been a good couple weeks. It's been like, I feel good about stuff.
You mentioned the autobiographical nature of Three Mics. Like, you know, you go through all of it. You know, you talk about your upbringing. You talk about your career. You talk about the highs and the lows.
Yeah.
And then when we were chatting really briefly, you were like, you know what? We should play A Life in the Day of Andre Benjamin.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing autobiographical song in just about 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, he like goes through it. And it's another one of these things where it's not cool per se. It's barely a song. It's the loop. It's probably a 6 second loop, and they just keep repeating it. And you get to hear about him and Erykah Badu and like people getting mad at him and thinking he was Tyrone from Call Tyrone. Yep. And just hit, and like his relationship with Big Boy, and it's just a cool, you get a real sense of what it was. It's like a first person point of view of like, here's what it's like to be me. That's a bit, which I think not even wittingly, but that's kind of, I think what people end up feeling with Three Mics is like, people say on Twitter, like, I've never met you and I feel like I know you now.
Like, these are what those shoes are like.
Yeah.
Yep. So without any further ado, we're going to play Outkast, A Life in the Day of Benjamin Andre.
So on a trip to New York on some beeswax, I get invited to a club where MC's at. And on stage is a singer with something on her head similar to the turban that I covered up my dreads with, which I was rocking at the time when I was going through them phases trying to find anything that seemed real in the world. Still searching, but I started liking this girl. Now do you know her? Is Erykah on and on Badu? Call Tyrone on the phone, why you do that girl like that, boy, you ought to be ashamed. The song wasn't about me, and that ain't my name. We're young in love, in short, we had fun. No regrets, no abortion, had a son by the name of Seven, and he's 5. By the time I do this mix, he'll probably be 6. You do the arithmetic, me do the language arts. Y'all stand against the wall, blindfolded, me throw the darts to poke you in the heart and take you from the start to when luxury transportation meant a martyr card. Or either when your girlfriend that went to May's mama or her daddy let her borrow the Benz because she's smart. Or maybe if your neighbor does you a huge favor and he sells you that rabbit that's been sitting in his yard. You fix it up, you trick it out, you give it rims, you give it bump, you give it all your time because that's all you can think about. And that's as far as I got.
And where I want to go from there, the whole summer, that's all you can think about. Even though if you cut it off, to start as they jump, you need a jump. Like your needs and your wants to grow. And you change all the time. So that rabbit that you thought about that whole summer, the next summer, you didn't want that rabbit no more. You wanted something bigger and better.
So the summer passed and now the rabbit's old.
Right. Right. So now you're in the Cadillac.
A Life in the Day of Benjamin Andre by Outkast, featuring, of course, Andre 3000 on the vocals. Man, I love that song. I love that song because he takes you through this whole range of different emotions. You hear him as a young guy, excited about meeting this girl. And I like that he's talking to this woman. It's almost like he's writing a letter to her.
Yeah.
Right? About where he's been, where his life is after they lost connection with each other. But yeah, he talks about the excitement of getting on and being a popular rap star and then meeting Erica and falling in love and having the kid and then traveling and then also repping Atlanta and all these things. It's like encapsulated in
And then there's that thing at the end, then now she won a Cadillac. Like, it's like this thing of like all this pursuing material and fame and wealth and all this stuff. And then like, it's just this thing of like, whatever you have, you always want more.
Yeah.
And the best illustration I've been on a few private jets, maybe four in my life. Oh. Like, it's never, I'm with somebody.
Stunt.
Every time I've been on a private jet, when you get off, someone will, if you're on like a Lear 5 or whatever the hell they're called, the person will always go, oh, that was the jet I wanted to get us. Every single time someone will point to a bigger jet and say, that was the jet I tried to get, but they didn't have any.
Hamster wheel of success.
Yes, basically. It's the
of material accumulation.
Yeah, the hedonic treadmill, it's called.
Hedonic treadmill.
Yeah.
There's an actual term for it.
Yep.
Wowzers, look at that. I want to talk about the emotional stuff on the on the record. On three mics, in three mics. How difficult was it for you to bare your soul in that way, right? And what were examples of people burying their souls in music or whatever that maybe heartened you, gave you the bravery?
You know what's a big influence that I didn't mention in terms of three mics? It was Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Mm.
The thing that was cool about Miseducation of Lauryn Hill was those they weren't even, I don't know what the hell they were. Those sketches in between in the classroom.
Yeah.
I'd never heard that on a record before. People did sketches.
That's true.
But they never did, like, that was like a documentary.
Yeah, it was
And I don't even know who, Lauren wasn't in it.
No, it was Ross Baraka talking to kids.
Yeah, okay.
The mayor of Newark now, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't even know, so that was like incredibly cool. And it was like really, it added to the overall essence of the record, like in the best possible way. And then the other thing was Lauryn Hill Unplugged, which is maybe the barest work of live, certainly the barest unplugged, and maybe one of the barest things. It's like you're almost watching someone have a nervous breakdown.
It's the mystery of iniquity. Said it's the misery of iniquity. Said it's the history of iniquity. Oh, and it all falls down. Yeah. Telling you all, it all falls down. Yeah.
I'm dating myself with this, but when that aired, me and Dave were writing the pilot for Chappelle's Show.
Wow.
Or we had done, the pilot got picked up.
Mm.
And we were then gonna, we started writing the first season. And I recorded it on VHS. That's how long ago this was. It's 2002. And I'm not kidding you when I say we watched it 10 times.
Wow.
We just watched it over and over and over and over. And that's when we wrote like Clayton Bigsby and a bunch of stuff. It was just like that feeling of this personal document and making. The thing about Chappelle's Show was it was a personal sketch show. And so that was, and that's what Three Mics is. It's a personal stand-up show. Like you get, there's stuff in Chappelle's Show that's sad. Like sorry to say, but the nigger family, Dave says this racism is killing me inside.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's not funny. It's sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's stark.
Oh, Lord. This racism is killing me inside.
But it was personal, and that's what Lauryn Hill Unplugged was, and that's what, if I can be so bold, that's what I was going for with Three Mics. Like,
apprehension. Was there ever any apprehension about getting as personal and revelatory as you did in that middle part?
Not really, because I'm not ashamed. I talk about depression, which I'm not ashamed of. I just see it as like having like acid reflux. I don't know. It's in fact, acid reflux a lot of times has to do with what you eat. It's not even that direct. It's just a chemical thing. The stuff with my dad, I don't have any shame about. The Starfucker stuff is, I have shame because it's a character flaw. And that I'm like ashamed of. And the reason I did it was, the reason I talked about it was because I am ashamed of it. And I felt like it was important for me personally. It's like when people put their, they'll post their like exercise progress online, they tend to do better. I almost said it in public just to keep myself honest. Just so like,
you're held accountable. You hold yourself accountable.
So when people, if anyone sees me as a celebrity, they can be like, shame on you, Neil. No, but like, I don't know. Just something about it was like, if I say this out loud and then breaking down why I am that and also like how it affected my life in a positive way, it's like in a, the positive and the negative, you know?
You know, that the emotional stuff parts of Three Mics, I feel like putting all that out there, being ashamed of some of it, not being ashamed of other parts of it, but being honest about all of it, has some level of catharsis to it. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's a bit of the Steve Martin in Roxanne and Eminem in 8 Mile of like, what are you going to say about me? I am white. I am a fucking bum. You know what I mean? I'm just going like, what are you going to say about that? I know that's what you, that's the worst thing you can say about me. So here, I'm saying it.
Here, I'll put it in front of you.
Yeah, and I mooched off Dave and all this stuff, but it's like, turns out, maybe I wasn't mooching off Dave. Maybe Dave has good taste and saw somebody that could, that he could work well with and create stuff with. You know? I think. It seems like, if you watch everyone, it's like, oh, this guy, okay, I get it.
Yeah, he seems to be talented, this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in thinking kind of about, like, an outpouring of emotion and catharsis, it leads us to our final selection, which is Ultra Light Beam by Kanye West.
Yeah.
A gospel-inflected song, a song that is, it's so weird because it's very, to me, it's very almost robotic, but it's also soulful at the same time. I feel like that whole The Life of Pablo record is bugged out because it's like scrolling through your timeline where you go through this range of emotions, right? But at the same time, there's like a choir playing, singing outside your window, right? So it's like this physical and spiritual thing happening.
Yeah, and it's that thing of like Kanye's albums have just gotten like way less organized and way more personal.
Yes.
And like, it's almost like, should I be hearing this?
It does seem a little voyeuristic sometimes. Yeah.
Like it's extremely bare. And that's what I like. And this and also I like that in this song you've got the YouTube clip at the beginning of the little girl. You've got a gospel choir, you've got and then you've got a really great verse by Chance, which is probably my favorite verse on that Pablo record. Maybe my favorite Chance verse in any record. And it's like all these disparate things that shouldn't work and work.
They don't know. Foot on the devil's neck till it drifted Pangea. I'm moving all my family from Chatham to Zambia. Treat the demons just like Pam. I mean, I fuck with your friends, but damn, Gina, I've been this way since Arthur was anteater. Now they wanna hit me with the woo after bam. Trying to snap photos of family. My daughter look just like Sia, you can't see her. You can feel the lyrics, the spirit coming in braille. Tell me another underground, come and follow the trail. I made Sunday candy, I'm never going to hell. I met Kanye West, I'm never going to fail. He said let's do a good ass job with Chance 3. I hear you gotta sell it to snatch the Grammy. Let's make it so free and the bar so hard that it ain't one gosh darn part you can't tweet. This is my part, nobody else speak. This is my part, nobody else speak. This little light of mine, glory be to God, yeah. I'ma make sure that they go where they can't go. If they don't wanna ride, I'ma still give them raincoats. Know what God said when he made the first rainbow? Just throw this at the end if I'm too late for the intro. I'm just having fun with it. You know that a nigga was lost. I laugh in my head cause I bet that my ex looking back like a pillar of salt.
Cause they flipped the script on your ass like Wesley and Spike. You cannot mess with the light. Look at the channel from 79.
We on an ultralight beam. We on an ultralight beam.
Pretty amazing song. Good way to start out an album, I must say. Neil.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Before you run out, I do want to ask you, how integral to your creative process, to your being, is music in general?
It's like, without being too pretentious, it's like, you know what's funny is my girlfriend, my now ex-girlfriend, ladies, pointed something out to me, which is, when I walk from room to room, I sing. I literally sing. I hum or sing every single time I like. I don't know if I think it's like a sitcom where I'm doing establishing song music. Mm-hmm. Like I'm constantly humming or singing or something. And like a lot of my friends are musicians. The I'm really close with the guys in the Roots and I'm Danger Mouse. Like there's a lot of guys that I'm really cool with and I just like musicians and I don't know. I think it's like in me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for most people who are artists, who are creators in any type of way, they're inspired by other types of art.
Yeah.
I've always seen that through line in a lot of your work, and I am glad for it.
Yeah.
And I think it makes your work much more appealing to everyone. I think it casts a broad net to everyone. Everyone can relate to it.
Yeah, there's a really good song at the end of Three Mics, which my friend Asa, who's in this band called Electric Guest, they have a record coming out in February, but he played me his demos, and it was like, can I please have this song? And it's a beautiful song. I'm friends with a lot of musicians, and I'm a real fan.
Well, this has been All Songs Considered with Neil Brennan. Three Mics is on Netflix.
Yep.
Four Mics coming next year.
I think we might go right to five.
Five Mics.
Yeah.
To bring it back around to the Source Comedy issue. Five
exactly.
Mics. You heard it here first. Neil Brennan, thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
All right, peace.